then they did a trade with the Suns. They brought in Natasha Cloud and Rebecca
Allen.
Wait,
who did they trade with?
They traded with, oh, sorry, not, no, yeah. It said Phoenix.
Okay, I was going to say, the Sun traded with the Suns.
Yeah, the Sun.
An interleague trade.
Look, they had to get Kevin Durant somewhere, right? What's up, nerds? It's basketball. Welcome to Horse, a basketball podcast about everything except for the wins and losses. My name is Mike Schubert, and I'm joined by my trusted co-host, the our sun in the human world eventually going to blow up to the Phoenix Suns eventually going to blow up. It's Adam Amawala. Adam, how's it going?
When you said our sun, I was like, not thinking of like the one in the clouds. And I didn't know if you and I had a sun that we hadn't told people about, which would be huge breaking news.
We've been working on the adoption papers for quite some time now.
I mean, honestly, I think if you and I were heterosexual life partners, we'd be pretty good dads. We'd be a couple of good dads.
But look, I think we can make it happen. We teach him to hoop. We teach him to be a good person.
Yeah. But in the meantime, the Sun and the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah.
Future not looking bright.
No, not great for the Suns of Phoenix specifically, as they are currently 29-33, which has them outside of the play-in. They are the 11th seed, and they had a big, some ridiculous losing streak of like 10 games or something obnoxious, or like they were 2-13 in their last 15, something really bad.
Yeah.
And they are at the point where they basically have said, we're going to trade Kevin Durant probably, unless we do really well in the playoffs. So, all right, we'll see how it goes. But anyway, yeah, we're going to talk about other basketball stuff on this basketball podcast. But to get ready to do that, we got to go and step into the Teal Memorial Locker Room, which also has very nice lighting that shouldn't explode.
Yeah, and better vibes than what I assume the Suns locker room must be.
Can't be good vibes. Can't be good vibes at all. But you know who has good vibes?
Our patrons.
Yes, shout out to our patrons, and shout out especially to our producer-level patrons, Polly Bird, Salvatore Testa, Javon Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang, Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry for 56.
Oh, he was hot.
Against my beloved Knicks. Hi, Trish.
Oh, no. Sorry. That was not, he didn't score 56 against the Knicks.
Oh, good. I know that they beat the Knicks last night. We're recording this on March 5th. I did not watch the game because I was busy playing tennis with my dad. So I'm glad the 56 was not against us. That's good. Yay. Yeah. But he still beat the Knicks. Boo. Yeah. Hi, Trish. Hi, Allie. Chase Underilo. Naked Rachel. Sidney Crosby is a vampire. Chelsea's cousin. Ginger Spurs boy. Balls to the balls. Mats Furuli. And Utah Jash.
Yes.
Is that a new one?
That is Josh.
Is that Josh?
Exactly. Ah. Josh. Isn't Rich, formerly Josh Isn't Rich, now Utah Jash. And we actually do have a new patron, or I guess, you know, co-patrons that we want to give a shout out to. So go ahead.
Yeah, shout out to our new patrons, Mark and Liz. Thank you.
Yes, I had a brief exchange with Mark and Liz. Sounds like they are big Pacers fans. So if they do ever upgrade to producer level status, it's possible they might troll you with something Reggie Miller related, but no word on that yet.
Go for it. They lost that series where he did the choke thing. So it's totally fine. You can't hurt me. That was one game. We won the series.
Yeah, and neither those Pacers nor those Knicks won a championship. So you can both talk shit to each other all you want.
Oh, gosh. But you know who also can't hurt me?
I would say cocktails.
Yes. Well, those can, but yeah, I don't think our sponsor can.
No.
Because the sponsor doesn't give you the alcohol, and it's always the alcohol that hurts you.
That's
as much
true.
As they want to say, like, it's the sugar that it's the alcohol.
Yeah.
It's the alcohol. But if you want to make some fancy cocktails and do it in a way where they're nice and fun and cost effective, definitely compared to going out to a bar, you can go to shakerandspoon.com/horse and get $20 off a box at Shaker and Spoon. And all you got to do is provide the alcohol. They give you all the other stuff, all the mix-ins to make 4 servings of 3 different drinks that all use the same liquor, and it's fun. It's cool for a little home cocktail party if you're hosting a couple people, a bunch of people, whatever, and then you get the skills and knowledge of how to make fancy drinks going forward. So again, you get $20 off if you go to shakerandspoon.com/horse. That's about 50%. The boxes are like $40 or $50, and it's a cool small business that supports us, so support them. Now, speaking of support, unless you are supporting us on Patreon, you're going to hear some inserted ads. But if you're on Patreon, you don't hear any of that. You just get right on through to the rest of the episode. But otherwise, you're going to hear some ads. Some of them are going to be read by us. Others will be locally inserted. And then we'll get into the rest of this episode of Horse. All right, Adam, what do you got? What's on the docket?
All right, I got some new stuff. Now, if you're listening to this the day that it comes out and you are in the New Jersey area, please come out to my show this Thursday, March 13th at the Stress Factory Comedy Club in New Brunswick. It's a great club. It's also, fun fact, the first place I ever stepped on stage to do stand-up comedy almost 20 years ago. Pretty wild to think about. I am also going to be in Niagara Falls, Ontario, with Dane Cook. That is on March 29th. I will then be in Newark, New Jersey, also with Dane Cook, at NJ Pack on March 30th. So that's a Saturday and Sunday later this month. New one that just got added, Minneapolis, on April 6th. That is at the Comedy Corner Underground. That's going to be a Sunday night show, so hope you can make it out to that. And then go see Shubes the following week in the exact same place. Not the same venue, but, you know, he'll elaborate.
Yeah, then, same general facility.
Yeah, Saturday, April 12th, I've got Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. On May 7th, I've got Cambridge, Massachusetts. So anyone in the Boston area can come out to that. On May 16th, I've got the Golden Nugget Casino in Lake Charles, Louisiana, also with Dane Cook. Then I've got Bozeman, Montana, and probably a couple other Montana shows on May 30th. And that weekend, Las Vegas, June 2nd through 8th, and a rescheduled Connecticut dates in Wethersfield, Connecticut on September 12th and 13th. What do you have, Mr. Shoes? By the way, I'm going to your theater tonight. I'm going to the Schubert Theater.
Ah, the heathens who spell it improperly. Mm-hmm. Those jerks leave out the C. How dare they?
I know.
I've got all the same stuff so far. I'm currently working on adding other dates, adding some stuff in September, looking at doing some other things, and as I mentioned, but at least all the dates that are official are on my website, schub.es/tour. This episode will come out right after we did the Houston show, so shout out to everyone there. And then, yes, as Adam alluded to, I'm doing a whole big Midwest run in April, so you can come to all of those shows. And we're going to be streaming the show that's in Des Moines on April 13th, and that's a half TNO, half Potterless show. So no matter where you live, you can attend that show virtually, because if you get the internet, you get this podcast, and if you get the internet, you can watch that show. So just make sure you're following me on social media once those tickets are available for purchase. That'll be up there, and it'll come with a replay and all that kind of stuff, so you don't have to watch it like the when it's actually streaming if you're in Finland, and that would be at like 2 a.m. or whatever. If you want to be a sicko, you can.
Sure.
But if you don't want to get sick and you want to get sleep, then you can watch it at a respectable time, you know, like 4 a.m. But that will be announced later on. Okay, now, do we have an NBQ&A, Adam?
We do have an NBQ&A, and we have one from one of our producer-level patrons, Mats Furli. And actually, let me roll that R a little better. Oh, Mats Furli. The question is, howdy, horse boys. I have a somewhat random question for you. Those are our favorite kind of questions. Do you have any teams from a specific season that were not the Bulls or the Knicks that you latched onto for some reason and found yourselves rooting for? Wishing you guys all the best. Hope you both have a fantastic day. Shubes, you first.
Yeah, I have a very clear answer to this. So when I was fresh out of college and an engineer boy, I have a distinct memory of watching the NBA playoffs for the 2014 playoffs, the 2013-2014 season. For whatever reason, I was home at my parents' place in Houston, and it was the series when the Warriors had just beaten the Nuggets, upsetting them, and then they were playing the Spurs, and it like went to 6 games, and it was really intense. And I remember watching a couple of games from that series being like, this team's really fun. I knew about Steph Curry because the Knicks were trying to get him, and I didn't really know about Klay Thompson, and it was just fun watching them. And I was like, these are a fun team. So then engineering work took me to Oakland, California, and this was in 2015, so the 2014-2015 season. I moved there in like I think I moved there in like September, October of 2014. So like right as the NBA season was starting.
Right.
And at this point in time, the Knicks were actively tanking. We were really, really bad and just like a complete slog to watch. This was the team that eventually got us the draft pick where we got Porzingis. So I was still a Knicks fan, true and true, but because I had kind of liked this team even before the move, I had moved to this new city and they had some fun young players and they hadn't really proven anything yet, I started watching the Warriors and going to a bunch of games live. Tickets were still dirt cheap because this was the first year that the Warriors were like really good. And fast forward, the Warriors won the championship that year. So it was a perfect like one season little departure. Like I lived in Oakland. I went to a bunch of the games. I went to playoff games. I got to go to the parade because of a night shift schedule starting for my engineering job that day. So I got to go to the parade on a Friday at noon.
Nice.
And it was just a really cool thing. So I liked that. And I still kind of followed the team and just as like a, oh yeah, I'll have a Western Conference team, until they got like too good. Once they got Durant, I was like, okay, I can't really, like, now I just feel like I can't do this. Right. You know, like, so it, that was like very clear. That particular season was just like crystal clear, and it was really fun. And I got to see Steph a bunch for like $30 a ticket, which is so funny now.
It's really cool. Yeah. I mean, it would be like if you had like bull season tickets in like 1989, where you're like, oh, I saw it right. before it all.
Or
happened.
Like 92, I guess. Right. Like the first year that they win the title.
Yeah, 90 would have been 90-91. So, yeah, I guess for me, I think I always latch on to like underdog stories or that mm-hmm. sort of thing. So whether it's like a matchup in the playoffs where it's some, you know, a team like the Raptors, right, who've never won a championship before, when they got to the finals, it was very easy to root for them. And or if I have a lot of friends who I know it would mean a lot to, which is why I've kind of become like weirdly somewhat of a Knicks fan, because I want you to be happy and many of my other friends. I would say the point where this was the most accurate for me was during Linsanity. Like, I was excited to watch the Knicks. Mm-hmm, and it wasn't even so much rooting for the Knicks specifically, just like rooting for him to do something miraculous every game. And the fact that he kept doing it, I distinctly remember like where I was watching him against the Lakers in that iconic game. And then also hitting the game winner against the Raptors, where it like basically felt like a Knicks home game in Toronto, which is pretty cool. So, I think I'm more so like, I'll go for a cool storyline or for an underdog, but like, I just love basketball. And unfortunately, the Bulls have not really been in meaningful games in a while. So I find like every playoffs, I don't necessarily go into it with a super clear idea of who I'm going to root for. But then as the storylines form and as things go along, it's just more fun. Even within a series, I'll flip sometimes. I might be rooting for one team and then that team goes up like 3-0. And I'm like, but it would be pretty cool if a team came back from 0-3. That would be kind of fun. So and I think it's not uncommon for people to feel that way. So that's my answer. And good question. Thank you for writing in.
Totally. Yeah. No, the Linsanity Knicks are what got me back into being a super big Knicks fan, because it was always like, oh yeah, they're my favorite team, but they're bad. Or at least for like that middle kind of like late 2000s run. And I gravitated towards like the Phoenix Suns with Steve Nash because they had cool uniforms and I liked Steve Nash. But once it was Linsanity, I was like, all right, I'm all in.
Yeah.
And has brought me to where I am today.
Totally.
Cool. Alrighty. Well, let's get into Full Court Press. Get into like the news.
I do.
All right. So we finally have a little bit of a lull in NBA news, so we can finally get into all of the WNBA offseason things that have been happening. But very quickly, we did mention the Suns are looking like they're going to break it up. Basically, it's not working. They got to do something. And Devin Booker wants to stay. The Suns want Devin Booker to stay. So the only real option, because no one wants Bradley Beal, is that you got to trade Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
And it seems like as mutual as it can be, where Durant wants to be on a contender, the Suns, it's not working with Durant. So they're going to try to work together. There is some report that's like, unless the Suns go super deep into the playoffs, they're going to work with Durant to find him a happy destination. So as far as moving a starter goes, seems like the most, you know, hospitable right. kind of way you can do it.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that develops, and maybe the Suns go on a miracle run and this all changes, but I don't see it happening. It's just hasn't really worked.
It's hard to envision them being anything better than a play-in team, and if they're a play-in team, even if they get into the playoffs, then you're probably going up against the Thunder or the Lakers or something like that, and I don't think you're probably going to win that series. So it doesn't feel like their ceiling's particularly high, but they still do have star power. It's just like, I don't know.
They're just not deep. That's the thing, is I feel like they have proven that you can't just have stars. You need to also have a whole full roster. And usually you need like some draft picks to hit. Like when you think of teams that had like dynastic runs, there's always like some dude on a rookie contract outperforming his contract. The Spurs had young Kawhi. The Warriors, like all those dudes were off of the draft and kind of all got good at the same time. Like the Thunder have been able to be the Thunder because like so many of their guys are young and they can get more flexible. So when you just have like big stars on big contracts and you had to trade away all of your picks to get them, and then you can't use those picks to get draft picks, it's just not deep. You're just not deep.
Yeah. And I mean, speaking of the Thunder, I think that's a great example of depth. You and I got to see them play the Nets a few weeks ago, and they were actually weirdly losing most of the game and ended up winning. But we were both commenting on like, oh, SGA hasn't even played the first half of the fourth quarter because they're just that deep. Also, they're playing the Nets, but I think mostly because like they have the other guys to plug in there.
100%. So the other NBA thing, if you thought that the Mavs were having a bad run of it, it somehow got worse. So to recap all of it, they trade Luka for no good reason, only bad reasons. Yeah. Then Anthony Davis has a great game and then gets hurt in the fourth quarter and then is out for like minimum 4 to 6 weeks. Then they had some injuries to some other guys. Like, I think like
PJ Washington kept getting hurt. There were a number of other guys.
And they already had guys hurt before. Like Gafford, I think, was hurt. So and Lively was hurt. So like dudes were already hurt. Then on top of all of this, Kyrie Irving has an injury in the game. It's seeming like it's a bad one, like kind of non-contact sort of knee issue. Stays on to make the free throws just like Kobe did when he ruptured his Achilles. And later after the game, you learn torn ACL, out for the season. So the Mavs traded away Luka because of injury concerns and then got back a guy who immediately got hurt. And then their other guy also got hurt. Just, it's tough. Their whole like justification of the trade was like, we are going to be better in the immediate future as opposed to the long-term future. And now they're cooked.
Yeah. And they also, they announced that they're raising ticket prices by 8.5%, which is, I mean, even if that was part of their plan that they came into this year and they were going to do that, the fact that you don't pivot from that when you know that all of your fans hate you in this moment, It makes me really think that there's something deeper going on where they're like, do they want their fans to hate them? Not to mention the fact, and we almost forgot to talk about this, there are some Mavs fans who are like, I'm so incensed with this team, I'm going to defect and be a fan of a different Texas sports team. And guess who's also out for the season is Victor Wembanyama. So Hector Banana Bread also out for the season.
Yeah, my boy Hector. Yeah, he had, I forget the name of the injury, but it's like a blood clot related issue.
Yeah, like in his shoulder, I think.
Yeah, you get it from like repeated arm motion. Now, it is bad and they've shut him down for the season. And also Pop is shut down for the season. He had a stroke and then he is recovered, but he's not coaching for the rest of the year. His future is uncertain. I would imagine, I mean, I have no idea. I have no idea if he'll come back, but we'll see what happens there. But yeah, they're shutting down Victor for the season. For people worrying about it, Brandon Ingram had apparently the same injury and he's perfectly fine now.
Right.
He had the same kind of thing where they like shut him down and then he came back next year totally fine. So in a weird way, as long as there's no like long-term implications for Victor / Hector, it's weirdly like one of the best possible things that could happen to the Spurs, because they'll get another higher draft pick for Victor. Like,
well, it's very much like when David Robinson got hurt and then they got Tim Duncan. Like, can you imagine if the Spurs got Cooper Flagg? It's not likely, but like that would be outrageous.
The thing is, it's like the perfect timing for it to happen. And I'm whispering because I like don't want to jinx the Spurs with this. But like they're currently, or at least right now today, March 5th, they're 26-34, which puts them third worst team in the West. Mm-hmm. And I believe the sixth worst team in the NBA. Or the East is really bad. Just kidding. They are better than that. But like they were kind of like putting it more together. Victor was playing better. Some of the other guys were playing together. Castle was coming along. And they were like looking like they were going to make a run or a push for the play-in. Mm-hmm. Now that's not really going to happen.
Right.
So like they'll at least have better odds. And apparently like this draft is good. So even if you don't get Cooper Flagg, the presumed number one pick, they should get like somebody good. So weirdly, this is kind of great for the Spurs as long as Victor's okay.
Sure.
Like as long as he's okay. Yes. As long as he's okay.
Yeah.
And hopefully he is, because he's fun and he's such a good kid. And I wish nothing but the best for him, because he seems like such a nice person. And I like when nice, good people are doing well in the NBA.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now let's get into the WNBA free agency recap. So as we record this, Unrivaled, the 3-on-3 league, is still going on and seems to be doing very well. Like the games are super fun. They did a whole 1-on-1 tournament, which was cool.
That
and
Nafisa
Collier won it. And she's one of the co-founders / co-owners / co-presidents of the league. So like weirdly paying herself, question mark?
I mean, if she earned it.
But that's the thing. She's also like one of the best players. Right. Like I think she was number two or number three in MVP voting. Mm-hmm. So like, it's not a ridiculous thing, but it is just kind of funny. But regardless, Unrivaled's going super well. But aside from that, there's also non-basketball things going well. All of the off-season stuff has been going on. Free agency has kicked off and is like mostly cooled off now, but there were trades, there were signings. And since at least right now, there's only 13 teams in the league, I was thinking just kind of go through a tracker and just kind of like talk about real quick what the teams did in terms of adding who left, whatever, because there's like some big shakeups.
Sure.
So we'll go alphabetical. Starting with the Atlanta Dream, you have the additions in free agency of Breonna Jones, Shatori Walker-Kimbrough, and Brittany Griner, which is a very interesting one, which will obviously have implications for the Phoenix Mercury. And then departures is Tina Charles left and Cheyenne Parker-Tyus left. As far as this for Atlanta, like, they weren't great. This doesn't feel like they're doing a big thing, but at least with Brittany Griner on the team, put butts in seats.
Yeah.
So,
do you think she's a draw, though? I mean, obviously she's a name and she has notoriety from everything that happened in Russia, but like,
I think enough, because let me look at the WNBA standings from last year, but I'm pretty sure that the Dream were one of the worst teams. So this is kind
they
of...
They were. They made the playoffs and got smoked by the Liberty, but they were a bad team.
Right. It was this thing of like them and the Mystics were like, oh no, are you sure? Like, don't let us win. But yeah, I think like they're in a situation where they're probably best to kind of be tanky. So you might as well have someone fun on the roster while you're doing it.
Yeah.
So that was the Dream. Now onto the Sky. They re-signed Michaela Onyenwere and they added Courtney Vandersloot, so she's back. Rebecca Allen was via a trade with the Sun. They got Kia Nurse, who can hoop, and they got Errol Atkins via a trade with the Mystics. They lost Diamond to Shields, which hurts. They lost Lindsay Allen, so what's fun is that trade had Rebecca Allen coming in and Lindsay Allen going out.
Right.
And then they lost Nikolina Milic and Dana Evans and Breonna Turner. So I think the Sky, not great. When you're looking at who is now on the team versus who left the team, I feel like you lost more than you gained. So not ideal.
Yep.
The Connecticut Sun had an interesting one because they lost some big names, but they also gained some big names. So they added Tina Charles. And, you know, she's older, but she was a league MVP and, you know, has a pedigree. So perhaps she still has some in the tank. They did a trade with the Mercury and they brought in Natasha Cloud. They also brought in Rebecca Allen. And then they did a trade with the Wings. They brought in J.C. Sheldon. They signed via free agency Diamond to Shields. And then in that trade that we said with the Sky, they got Nikolina Milic and Lindsay Allen. So they have two Allens on the roster now.
Can we hold on? We cannot have teams named the Sun and the Sky and then also have a player whose last name is Cloud. This is just too confusing.
Natasha Cloud, yeah, I mean, look, it's a perfect fit, right? I mean, I guess she'd be a better fit on the Storm, wouldn't she?
Yeah, probably.
And there was a time where I thought she might, so that's fun. But yeah,
and she has a child named Cumulonimbus, which is pretty cool.
Oh, God. Oh, it's like when Kanye named their kid North. Ugh, gross. Mm-hmm. So then they added Lila Lakin and Kariata Diaby. I will be honest, I am unfamiliar with these players, so I may have mispronounced both of those names. But you may have also noticed, if you're a fan of the Sun, that you lost some big names. You lost Breonna Jones. You lost Alyssa Thomas.
That's tough one.
You lost Dejanae Carrington.
Yeah.
You lost Tiasha Harris. You lost Rebecca Allen. And then you lost DeWanna Bonner. So, like,
I mean, Bonner and Thomas and Carrington are like all the players that got them to the finals.
Yeah. It's pretty tough. Now, some of these people left via either free agency or sign and trade, so it's not like they had a say in it, or at least it's not like they made a foolish decision to trade them. But yeah, it's a really tough blow for the Sun. You go from contender finals team to and it's not ideal.
Yeah.
The Dallas Wings also looking promising, given that they won the lottery. So in theory, they are going to get Paige Bueckers. Unless you believe the conspiracy theories that I like to believe, that she doesn't want to play in Dallas. She doesn't want to go to the Dallas Wings. So she's going to do something weird so that she can go to the Seattle Storm with the number two pick. I don't think that's going to
happen. Well, what could she possibly do that would be weird?
She could. The only thing she could do is stay in college for another year, which I do not think she will do.
Right.
But she could do that. And then the Storm have good draft pick situations for the next season, because I believe we own the Sparks pick and the Sparks should not be very good. But I don't think that's going
to
happen.
Let me tell you something. If you live in Dallas and you're a basketball fan, it is time to go all in on the Wings.
Switch, baby. Yeah. Switch.
It is time.
So, Here's who they added. They added Myesha Hines-Allen, who's very good. They added Makia Herbert-Harrigan via trade with the Mercury.
That's a Harry Potter-ass name, let me just say that.
Makia. I'm also unfamiliar with her, so I may have butchered that. Then they got Dejanay Carrington via trade, huge. They got Tiasha Harris via trade, and they got Nalissa Smith, who's also a pretty good player, via a trade with the Fever. They lost Satu Sabali, which hurts. She's very good. That's very, very tough to lose her. But if you're bringing in Paige, maybe, and I think like some of the weird rumblings was that like there was rumblings that she wasn't going to play with Arike Ogunbowale. So I don't know, but it was a sign and trade thing. So like, I don't think you can really do anything. You do the sign and trade so that you don't lose her for nothing.
Right.
But they lost Satu. They also lost Kalani Brown, Sevgi Uzun, who was like a good rookie, but like not amazing. Jaylen Brown, JC Sheldon, and Natasha Howard, who is a solid player.
Right.
So not ideal, but if you get Paige, everything should be okay in Dallas, at least for the long term.
Right.
But well, now the Golden State Valkyries couldn't really do much because they're a brand new team, but they added Tiffany Hayes via free agency, which is fun. And they also added Letitia Emeheri. Again, unfamiliar with her, but they got her via waivers. Indiana Fever, the winners of free agency, because holy crap, they re-signed Kelsey Mitchell, who can absolutely hoop. They added Sophie Cunningham, who's a pretty good player that was on the Mercury, via a trade. They added Jaylen Brown. They added Natasha Howard via free agency. They added DaJuana Bonner.
Wait, did you say Jaylen Brown?
Jaylen Brown, not of the Celtics.
Yeah, interesting.
Jaylen Brown spelled J.
I didn't know there was a Jaylen Brown in the WNBA.
Yeah, so Jaylen spells it J-A-E-L-Y-N.
Okay.
She was a rookie for the Wings last year. Didn't get a ton of run, just like 10 minutes a game or so. But yeah, not the Jaylen Brown you might know, but maybe a very new cool Jaylen Brown you'll get to know. The Fever.
Cool. Sorry to interrupt.
But they added, you're good. Please do. Then they added Natasha Howard, huge. DaJuana Bonner, huge. Sydney Colson, huge. And Breonna Turner, huge.
And also a reminder, they do have Caitlin Clark. So
they also still have Caitlin Clark on the team.
Yeah, they're going to be, I would be shocked if they don't make the playoffs this year.
I would be shocked if they don't make the finals. Like, oh man.
Yeah.
Well, it just, incredible. You lose Nalissa Smith, you lose Erica Wheeler, but like, come on. I mean, like, come on.
Good luck sitting courtside for $80.
Gosh, they're looking great. Like and you still have Caitlin Clark and you still have Aaliyah Boston. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that's the thing with the WNBA. Like, with a couple of good signings, you can go from being like the Fever were the worst team in the league 2 years in a row. Then they had this fun, cool playoff run with Caitlin Clark, and now they're like the number one favorites potentially, as long as like the on paper champions. It's nuts. So that's wild. The Las Vegas Aces had the big trade with Kelsey Plum and Jewel Lloyd. So they added Jewel Lloyd in a trade with the Storm. They added Cheyenne Parker-Tyus via free agency. They added Dana Evans via a trade with Chicago, and they lost Kelsey Plum via this signing trade. So it was a three-team trade. Kelsey Plum went to the Aces, and then the Storm got draft picks mostly, and then some young players, and then they sent away Jewel Lloyd, who I just missed this because when it was going on, the NBA season was in full tilt, but there was like a big like Jewel Lloyd versus the coaching staff player disgruntlement hubbub. Hmm. And there was even an investigation launched to see if there was like bad misconduct. The third party firm found nothing. So it's kind of hard to say, like, was it like real malpractice? Was it just people not getting along?
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like some of the other players had issues. Don't really know. And I don't know that we ever will know. But regardless, Jewel Lloyd did not want to be a part of the Storm anymore, which sucks because I loved Jewel. But she's on this big max contract. It wasn't really working out basketball wise. So like weirdly kind of an okay thing for the Storm. We got some good draft picks as well. So that'll help for our future. So
yeah.
Seems like now everyone's where they want to be. Kelsey Plum gets to kind of run the show in LA. Jewel Lloyd gets a new change of scenery. The Storm get to get more draft picks. Seems like everyone did all right with this trade.
Hmm.
And the consensus was that the Storm did the best. So I'm very happy.
Mm.
Now, the Los Angeles Sparks obviously got Kelsey Plum, as we just mentioned. They also got Mercedes Russell, who signed via free agency, used to be on the Storm. She's very good, big. They added Shanice Swain, and they lost Lee Yeru, went to the Storm in that Kelsey Plum deal. They lost Kia Nurse via free agency, and they lost Lexi Brown in the Kelsey Plum trade. The Lynx re-signed Natasha Hedeman, who's a great player. They added Mareem Badian and Grace Berger. Unfamiliar with these players, I'm so sorry. And they lost Maisha Hines-Allen, pretty solid player. The Liberty didn't do
Wait,
too much.
Hold on. There's a Berger and a Hines.
Ooh. Come well, on. The Hines-Allen left, unfortunately.
Man.
Yeah, I know. Not
now,
what you
if
want.
Dejanay were there, then you'd have a Mustard and a Hines.
God.
I mean, this is just, I'm having fun.
Yeah. Now, the Liberty re-signed Kennedy Burke. They added Isabel Harrison. They lost Courtney Vandersloot, which hurts. The Mercury, very busy via trades, but obviously when Diana Taurasi retires, which that's unfortunate, and that's a whole thing. You would have loved the farewell tour, but I'm also not surprised that Diana Taurasi did not want to do the farewell tour.
More on that to come in my 3-on-3.
Yes. So they added Alyssa Thomas, Satu Sabali, pretty solid if you're going to lose some of your star players to get a huge young star back. Kalani Brown, Sevgi Uzun, Sammy Whitcomb, very good player as well, and Kitia Laksa. So the Mercury like kind of cashed in. I feel just as good about their chances. Like, contender, but not oh my god, but they basically exchanged old players for young players, and right. I feel like they're going to be okay. So they lost Brittany Griner, Sophie Cunningham, Natasha Cloud, Rebecca Allen, and Makia Herbert-Harrigan. So, and then Diana Taurasi.
But to lose Griner and then have Taurasi retire, I mean, those are like iconically Phoenix Mercury players, so it's going to be a kind of a whole new regime there.
These trades, especially when these trades happened, I kind of felt like, I bet Diana Taurasi is going to retire. Like this, the trades felt like we need to angle more for the future kind of move.
It's also possible that she had been in touch with them and was like, I'm leaning towards not coming back. So like,
correct.
I don't want to
do what you
inhibit
do.
You doing what you want to do.
Yeah. And I did see, I don't know if it was on the WNBA website or the ESPN website, but there was something about the moves that the Mercury made and the headline was Mercury in retrograde.
Oh, it was
pretty
good.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
And then the Storm re-signed Nneka Ogumike and Gabby Williams, which is huge. Two of our best players from the past season.
Yeah.
They added Lee Yeru in that Jewel Lloyd deal, which is great. We re-signed Alicia Clark, Seattle Storm legend Alicia Clark. So that's awesome. Erica Wheeler signed. She's a great player. Mackenzie Holmes, Lexi Brown, and Katie Lou Samuelson. I don't know why, but on this WNBA tracker I'm using, it has Katie Lou, Samuelson, even though she's just Katie Lou Samuelson. So it sounded like we were added two separate people. Like we added Katie Lou and Samuelson.
Sure.
So Katie Lou was on the Storm in the past as well. So we had a couple like familiar faces coming back, which is fun. But out, we lost Jewel Lloyd, Sammy Whitcomb, and Mercedes Russell.
Okay.
So I think we similarly what I thought with the Mercury. I feel like the Storm are kind of in the same thing of like, we're going to be just as good this next season, but mainly with the Jewel Lloyd trade, where our future is brighter.
Nice.
And then the Mystics, who were not good. They were quite bad.
I think it's just a Washington, D.C. basketball thing because it seems it's pretty bleak there.
They re-signed no one. They added no one. They lost two players in trade/free agency, Shatori Walker-Kimbrough and Ariel Atkins. Now, I'm pretty sure that's because the trade that they made with Chicago is just like a picks-only kind of thing, but they are like deep in the rebuild, just trying to get high draft picks. I think they have like good draft picks in the upcoming draft, so they are very much in like a, we're going to worry about it later.
Yeah, they might be the only place where you could sit courtside for $80 still. In the W.
We should consider it. Like Amtrak.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Amtrak, courtside Amtrak might be might be the move.
I think, I'm very curious.
We'll see. But that has been the WNBA free agency offseason tracker situation. Lots of moves. Very excited about them. We will revisit things after the draft. I think we'll have our WNBA correspondent, Jordan Liggins, come back into the mix once the draft is complete. So we can really kind of look at like now with the chips falling, because there might be draft day trades with the chips falling. Now, how are we looking? But for now, that's what's going on in the WNBA. And that concludes Full Court Press. Get it like the news.
1, 2, 3. 3-2-1, 3-on-3.
But I alluded to it before, but it was only fitting that for today's 3-on-3, I had to honor the great Diana Taurasi after she announced her retirement several weeks ago. Now, I'm not sure where you rank Diana Taurasi on your all-time list of women hoopers.
I mean,
I feel like she's on the Mount Rushmore.
It's not like to discredit other players who were already older when the WNBA started, when you think of people like Lisa Leslie and Cheryl Swoops, but like start to finish career, you got to give her number one. Like she's
certainly in WNBA history. Yeah. Cause it's like, yeah, if you're talking about like Cheryl Miller, people of that generation that like never got a chance to play in the WNBA cause it didn't exist. Like that's a little harder to say, but I mean, I think easily on your Mount Rushmore and certainly the best, like one of the handful of best players ever.
If she's not in your top five,
right.
She's not in your top three. I'm concerned for how much you actually watch women's basketball.
Yeah, I would agree. So for today's segment, I figured I would list off DT's three most impressive personal accomplishments and team accomplishments. We're going to start with the individual stuff. Now, this isn't even technically on the list, but Taurasi spent all 20 of her WNBA seasons with the Phoenix Mercury, and that in and of itself, an enormous accomplishment. But at number three on my list, let's take it all the way back to Taurasi's college days at perennial powerhouse UConn, at which she became the first player in school history to amass 2,000 points, 600 assists, and 600 rebounds. While she would not be the last player to achieve that feat, more than 20 years later, she's still in the top 10 in numerous categories for UConn women hoopers. As of this recording, she is 10th overall in scoring, 3rd in three-pointers made, and 3rd in assists in program history.
That's really impressive given that basketball pace has increased over the 20
and just how good UConn
been there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're always good.
Right.
And basketball's always evolving. That's why like you look at some of these per season things and it's just like miles ahead.
Sure.
Like, yeah, maybe Del Curry would have had better numbers if he shot more than 5 threes a game. If he was like Steph who's shooting 14.
Yeah. At number two on our individual accomplishments list, we have a 2-for-1. During her 20-year career, DT was named All-WNBA 14 times and was named to 11 WNBA All-Star games. And if that second number feels low, don't worry, I felt the same way. The caveat here is that between COVID and some of the seasons where the WNBA was struggling and didn't actually have an All-Star game, there were only 15 All-Star games during her 20-year career, and she took part in 11 of those 15.
Yeah.
Finally, though, I have to recognize the numerous categories in which Diana Taurasi is first all-time in the WNBA record books, and there are a lot of them. Now, obviously, much like LeBron, a lot of this reflects her longevity, and some of these records may fall eventually. But at this exact moment, DT is the all-time WNBA leader in seasons played with 20, scoring titles with 5, three-pointers made, career field goals made, and career points. Now, her points total is perhaps the most jaw-dropping figure because she is the only player in league history with over 10,000 points, ending her stellar career with 10,646 points. Do you happen to know who is second all-time, and how many career points do you think they have?
Is it a current player or a past player?
It's a current player.
Current player.
Current veteran player, obviously.
Yeah, is it Tina Charles?
It is Tina Charles, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So Tina Charles is currently second all-time with 7,696 points, but that is an almost 3,000-point difference between the next person. For reference, the difference between them, which is 2,950 points, is equivalent to 38% of Tina Charles's lifetime point total. Like, that's how big that gap is. And the wild thing is, this record isn't going anywhere anytime soon. Of the women on the top 10 scoring list of all time, only Tina Charles, who's heading into her 14th season, Dawana Bonner heading into her 16th season, and your beloved Nneka Ogumwike, also heading into her 14th season, are currently active players. So it's unlikely that any of them will play long enough to surpass DT, and it's going to be some time before that happens, if it ever does. Fun little exercise, though, I was going to ask you, of players currently in the league, who do you think has the best chance to eventually catch Taurasi, if anyone?
I mean, the thing is, I would say someone like Caitlin Clark or maybe even Paige Beckers, just because not only are they good and not only has like the league sort of changed where scoring is going to be up, but now they're getting into a league where there's more games played.
Right.
And I feel like that number's only going to go up.
Right.
So I would defer to people who are going to be playing in like 40 plus game seasons as opposed to whatever else is there. I also would imagine Diana Taurasi's got to be the number one leader in fouls and technical fouls, right?
Yes, I would think so. I did not include that, but I would assume so. Yeah. I mean,
she's got to be.
Yeah.
Let me Google it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And ejections probably.
Okay, so it doesn't have all the info, but it does have personal fouls. You said the other stuff like three-pointers made and all that, but free throws made and free throws attempted, she's number one.
Oh, that's cool.
And also, this is certainly a longevity thing. She's also number one in turnovers.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But also, if you look at the top 10 turnovers list, it's like a murderer's row of players. Diana Taurasi, Sue Bird, Becky Hammond, Tina Thompson, Lisa Leslie, Delisha Milton-Jones, Tisha Pinciero, Courtney Vandersloot, Swin Cash, and Candace Parker.
Wow.
That's a pretty good team.
Yeah, that's a great team. That's incredible. All right, let's move over to DT's team accomplishments, of which there are also a multitude. At number three, we're going to start in college again with Tarazi's outrageous college career at UConn, during which she finished with a genuinely rude 139-8 record. 139-8, including a perfect season during her sophomore year and national championships in three of those 4 years. My favorite anecdote from this time, which in my opinion perfectly encapsulates her insatiable drive for greatness, is that after a poor shooting performance in the Final Four during her freshman year contributed to UConn getting knocked out of March Madness, a then 18-year-old Tarazi was quoted as saying, "We will not lose another tournament game while I'm wearing this uniform." UConn then proceeded to win three straight national titles. And like I said, this unbridled confidence would be a signature of Tarazi's career. My other favorite anecdote from her college days is that before her final NCAA tournament, when asked how likely it was that UConn would achieve their three-peat, legendary coach Gino Auriemma smiled and said simply, "We have Diana and you don't."
I mean, yeah, dude.
Valid.
So good. Oh.
At number two, we have to talk about Tarazi's three WNBA championships with the Phoenix Mercury in 2007, 2009, and 2014. While the legendary Cappy Pondexter would take home WNBA Finals MVP honors in 2007, a young DT still put up gaudy numbers in that series, averaging 19.8 points, 6 rebounds, and 2.4 assists in the series. 2 years later, DT would find herself at the top again, this time earning those series MVP honors as the Mercury defeated the Indiana Fever 3-2. In those 5 games, Tarazi would average 20.4 points, 6.8 rebounds, and 2.8 assists, all increases from her first finals 2 years prior. And 5 years later, DT would win what was to be her last WNBA Finals crown, taking home MVP honors for a second time in a sweep of the Chicago Sky. This was no real shock because the Mercury had been dominant that year, finishing the regular season with an incredible 29-5 record, while the Sky finished the regular season below 500 at 15-19, but caught fire in the playoffs. Tarazi would average 20.3 points, 6.3 assists, and 3.3 rebounds in leading her team to the finals victory.
Absurd.
Finally, and this particular stat was talked about a lot this past summer, but Diana Tarazi is the only player in basketball history, men's or women's, to win 6 gold medals. The 6 Olympics she played in literally spanned her entire WNBA career, with the first coming at Athens in 2004 during her rookie season, and the final one this past summer in Paris in 2024 during what ended up being her final WNBA season. Though she didn't play much during that final championship run this past summer, teammates and coaches agreed that her presence and leadership was invaluable. Her most impressive Olympic performance came in Rio in 2016, where she averaged 14.2 points and 3.8 assists. And look, regardless of what her individual stats were, it's wildly impressive to play long enough to even participate in 6 Olympics, let alone to win gold every single time. So, all that to say that wherever you rank Diana Taurasi on your GOAT list, she leaves the WNBA as one of the greatest to ever do it. And for that, we will always be thankful. Shout out, DT.
Oh, man, just the 6 golds, the 44-0 in the Olympics, like, come on. And on top of all of that, did you see the recent reporting that came out about the trash talk that she said to Draymond Green at these most recent Olympics, where she asked him, or I guess not the most recent ones, because he wasn't there. Or was it with the most recent one? Whatever it was. At an Olympic event, she said to Draymond Green, when they're all in the legends, you know, all the greatest players are talking, she asked Draymond what it felt like to be the only person who hasn't been double teamed before.
Hilarious.
So good. I also saw when she announced her retirement, she was doing a Time interview and they asked her, "Where do you think your place is in the women's basketball greatest of all time conversation?" She had the perfect response. She just said, "I have a resume."
Yeah, so let the numbers speak for themselves.
Perfect, perfect way to like still sound as bravado-ish as you can without actually, you know, trying to be a heretic of anything to, you know, disrespect anyone. Really smart. "I have a resume" is a great response. All right. Well, I'm glad that you covered a goat for your 3-on-3, because I am actually going to be covering another woman goat in the basketball sphere for my That Actually Happened today. Learning the story of Red Panda, baby.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yes. Okay. I think we were all chatting that Red Panda was at what? Was our friend Chris saying Red Panda was doing the halftime show at a Boston College game?
I think so.
And we were like, you should go just to see.
And all of us had seen Red Panda in person. I got to see Red Panda during halftime of a Connecticut Sun Chicago Sky playoff game. You got to see Red Panda maybe multiple times, but definitely.
At multiple times.
At the Storm finals.
At least at the Storm
game,
finals. Yeah. But it's just, if you've never seen it, go on YouTube right now. And it's what's perfect about it. Is she just does the same thing every time.
Yeah.
And it's perfect every single time.
Yeah.
She gets on a 7-foot-tall unicycle in a cool outfit. She goes back and forth. She puts one bowl on her foot, flips it on her head, puts two bowls on her feet, flips it on her head, and it keeps the other ones balancing the whole time. 3, 4. Did she go up to 5 or did she stop at 4?
No, I think it's more than 4. She should sell merch that says bowl is life.
I'm going to contact Red Panda right now.
Yeah, there's no time to waste.
I did check. It is 5. So the final thing is she has 5 bowls. And it's not like they're stacked all nice. They are alternate. So when she has them stacked, it is bottom on her foot and then the two tops and then the two bottoms. Like, it's a long stack. And then she flips it and they all land on her head. It's unreal. It's
how do you learn that you have this skill?
I'm about to tell you the story.
Oh, yeah.
So I got to give a shout out to Jake Fisher, who wrote an incredible write-up on Sports Illustrated in 2019 that tells this whole tale. And I'm basically just kind of like paraphrasing things that he did in his reporting there. So huge shout out to Jake for this incredible article. Like, it's emotional and fantastic. We'll link it on the episode page. Couldn't recommend reading it enough. But this is the story of Red Panda, whose actual name is Wrong Crystal New. So her routine is apparently derived from a traditional Chinese acrobatic act. And her father, who was also her coach, her trainer, he ramped up the difficulty. And the ramping up specifically is having the bowls not be like stacked together. So my understanding is that some people would do the bowl flip onto the head thing, but her dad was like, you're going to stack them so it's this big tower that you're flipping and not just like a condensed stack of bowls that you're flipping under your head, which would be hard. Like, even doing the one bowl is hard, but doing the stack.
I like that for them, it's like the family business.
It is. I mean, truly, like, she is quoted in this article as saying a lot of people think of it as a one person act, but I think of it as a two person act because the coaching was such an important element of it, which makes sense because it's such a ridiculous, intense thing. Like, yeah, you're going to need good coaching. So Crystal started this at age 7. Mm-hmm. At age 7, began flicking dishes skyward, but doing this while standing on the floor, not on a 7-foot unicycle. And eventually that came later. Now, her father, whose name I believe is pronounced Guizhang, it's Guizhang. He then fashioned a giant pair of scissors where he would walk around to pick up the, because he had a bad back. So
I wonder why.
He'd be going around picking them. Yeah, I don't know what he did earlier in his life. I know he went on to be a coach and a teacher of gymnastics and acrobatics. So it would make sense that maybe he did that younger in his life as well. I think the article gets into it, but I was focusing on the Red Panda of it. So he then designed the 7-foot-tall unicycle. He made the sketch. He brought it to a custom factory nearby that makes all sorts of theatrical items and props and stuff. In the past, this place also made a bike that could hold 24 people. So he was like, hey, can you make the 7-foot-tall unicycle? And they were like, absolutely yes.
Child's play. We'd be happy to.
So he then has this when Crystal gets older, starts teaching it, and apparently at age 12 she began performing full time, and at this age she would flip up to 4 bowls at once. And even through all of this, her dad was kind of like a very stern teacher, and it wasn't this like outward pouring of love, but she in the article says things of like, you could tell with certain looks that he was proud of you, and if he was upset he would do kind of like the I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed kind of thing. So then she joined the Shanghai Acrobatic Troupe at age 14. She completed the 7-year program of this place in 4 years. And then she traveled throughout Asia and Europe and Africa. When she turned 16, they made a stop on an international tour in Denver at an amusement park. And the crowd just absolutely went wild. And from that moment forward, Red Panda knew, okay, America is the place for me. They had the greatest reaction for this. Like, this is where my future is going to take me. So a couple years later, she's on another American tour with this group, and Disney World approaches her. They offer her residency at the Chinese Pavilion in Epcot.
Cool.
She immediately takes the job, and people love it. And she just thought that the outpouring of love, again, in America was better than anything that she got anywhere else. So she would do the performances, and Disney encouraged her to like walk through the crowd and meet people and stuff. And apparently when she would do this, she would meet people who wanted her to perform at various events. So many business cards were coming in her way that she decided to go full time with doing private events and just kind of running her own thing as opposed to doing it for someone else. So she's freelancing full time from this point forward in San Francisco, California.
I maintain that you should have had her at your wedding.
I mean, look, here's the thing. From the article, I learned that at the peak of her popularity, which I don't know how she's not a plateau.
Yeah.
She would charge $5,000 per halftime show performance. Mm-hmm. Now it seems to be, at least from the reporting in 2019, between like $2,500 and $3,500. That's expensive. That's not insane.
No.
Like it's not, it is an achievable expense.
Yeah. Like, it's not like $50,000.
Right. And like when you're doing stuff at a wedding, like there's big budget items. I didn't even process it. It's probably for the best.
Yeah.
Because I had to fight really hard to get like the breakfast tacos as the party favor.
Yeah.
The families were like, this is ridiculous. Are people going to like this? And you were there. Was that not a huge hit?
Of course it was a hit. People have been boozing.
Fight for those.
Who doesn't like that a breakfast taco?
Yeah. And that's like a couple hundred max. Like,
right.
The red panda might have been a harder sell. Now. Is it out of the question for when Kelly and I have one of our big anniversary parties that we have every 4 years because we got married on a leap day? Like, come on. Come on.
Yeah. So, something to think about.
Just be ready.
Okay.
I be ready.
All right.
So she now is living in San Francisco and she is doing different freelancing gigs. The first thing that happens for her, though, in terms of the NBA, is in 1993. So the Los Angeles Clippers were the first people to contact her for an NBA performance because they had an act that was going to perform that had an injury, so they needed a short notice replacement for a halftime show the next night. So she catches a flight to Los Angeles and is ready to perform. She nails the performance in her first NBA halftime show. Gets all of the bowls clearly on top of her head. All is good. And from that moment on, and she was wowed by it. She was like, they gave a huge standing ovation every time I did it. And at this point, she did the four bowl thing. So like, she's doing all of them. And they're getting hype every single time. So
you got to remember, this is 1993. This is the only thing Clippers fans had to cheer about.
Yeah. So apparently by the 1994-1995 season, the next year, she did 40 halftime shows. Ooh. So you go from 1 to 40, pretty solid
bank.
Upgrade. Yeah. Now, when you get into the present day, she does two performances every single season with the Philadelphia 76ers. They just open up the schedule and they say, you pick the two best dates that work for you. Come on through. And they also like try to get her to do it at the nationally televised games, which is great.
Yeah.
Absolutely great. Makes me want to definitely keep a tally of whenever the Sixers. Maybe she's got a website where it tracks, but like, I should be watching League Pass for whatever game she's doing.
Yeah, that's
true.
League
Pass always shows the halftime show.
Right.
So she's doing that. Obviously, she does a bunch of Warriors games since she lives in San Francisco. And actually, I watched a performance last night of her doing a Warriors game. There was a situation where her unicycle was stolen from I don't know if it was from the checked baggage or whatever at the airport or if it got lost, whatever. But like the reports were that her unicycle was stolen. And then she had to perform for years on like a unicycle she hobbled together out of like spare parts in case part of her unicycle breaks. So she was using that for a while.
What the
hell? Then the Warriors bought her a new unicycle use. And they present her with the unicycle at the halftime show. And then she gets on it and does a perfect performance.
My God.
So good. It's so good. Oh, man. About the performance, Steve Kerr has been quoted as saying, quote, it's ridiculous. It's unbelievable. It's one of the best halftime shows. She's fantastic. Correct, Steve.
Yeah.
Correct.
Another good take from Steve Kerr.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the early 2000s, her parents joined her to live with her in San Francisco. And she also, in 2013, performed on America's Got Talent. And I was like, oh my God, did she win America's Got Talent? Looked into it. She left early in order to caretake for her father. Mm. He was getting older and wasn't doing well health-wise. So I can't imagine her not winning that competition. But
you know,
if there was ever a reason to dip out early, it feels like a pretty legitimate one, especially given that, you know, obviously her father, but also her trainer. Like a huge part of her life. Absolutely huge part of her life. So she sat out the 2013-2014 NBA season because, as the only English speaker in her family, she was kind of running point for all of the different doctor's appointments that her dad had to go to. So took a break there. Then after a full year without performing, without practice, she got back on it. She wanted to continue as a way to honor her father. And unfortunately, she was doing a performance and she suffered an injury. So bike slips, she falls. Obviously, it's really high up in the air. She breaks her arm quite badly, and she was out for another 10 months. So you're out for a year.
And did her dad pass away?
Yes. Ooh, I don't know exactly when, but I think I would assume during this off year, but I'd have to reread the article. But she has that year off. She has the 10 months off, but then she comes back and, you know, is full swing Red Panda again. So they also in this article get into like her routine when she is getting ready to do a show. So she usually shows up 90 minutes before tip off. It takes 30 minutes to assemble the unicycle's three pieces into one cohesive machine.
Okay.
Then she does a 20 minute stretching routine.
Yeah, I mean, as she should.
Yeah, 20 minute stretching routine.
I do that before we record this podcast. So it makes sense that she would do that.
She does her own hair. She does her own makeup. And then she usually leaves while the third quarter is going on because she doesn't want to deal with traffic.
Respect. I mean,
respect. You
know, I get it.
So she also apparently usually practices at Christ Church Lutheran ELCA, has done that for over 30 years. So if you're near there, maybe just stroll through.
Pop in.
Maybe you get a free Red Panda performance. And she has done other things like in the summers, she would book 3 month stints on cruise ships, obviously, because the NBA is not going on.
You imagine doing that on a boat that's moving, though?
Come on, she's Red Panda, baby.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess now with like more WNBA games, she probably could just keep doing that, but maybe she wants to see the world. I don't know. But she has been performing on and on. I hope she keeps it going. I hope she never stops. She's a legend. She's a treat. And about her whole performance, there's like lots of great quotes with her in the article, but this one really stood out to me towards the end of the article. Quote, "If you think at the beginning you can't do it, if you put your hard work and your heart in there and you like it and you want to do something different from most people, keep working on it. This is what my dad told me. People didn't think it could work and we tried and kept on trying to be a better percentage. All is possible, I guess, if you keep on trying." So shout out to Red Panda. Shout out to Gui Zhang and shout out to the greatest halftime performer the game has ever seen.
I love that. She's incredible, and I hope she keeps doing it for as long as she can. She can't be that young anymore, but
I think she's like 50.
Yeah, unbelievable.
I think she was like born in 1970.
Wow.
So yeah, she's like
55.
She's like 55. Still doing it.
Just a couple goats.
Couple of goats.
Love it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Horror Sources, hosted by Adam Amawala and Mike Schubert. Our editor is Kensei Suramaki. The music is by Bettina Kapamanis. The art is by Allison Wakeman. The website is by Kelly Schubert. And the social media is by both of the Horse Boys.
Thank you to our producer level patrons, Polly Bird, Salvatore Testa, Shimon Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry for 56.
Bang!
Hi Trish, hi Allie, Chase Underulo, Naked Rachel, Sydney Crosby is a vampire, Chelsea's cousin, Ginger Spurs boy, Balls to the Walls, Mats Furley, and Utah Jash. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Horse Hoops and on Twitter at Horse_Hoops because
Horse Hoops is the person who stole Red Panda's unicycle. Come on.
They should be banned from the world.
What are you even going to do with it?
Were they replacing their own unicycle that they lost? Like, it seems unlikely.
Blue Tiger, no!
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Nevertheless, you can go to our website, horsehoops.com, for links to many of the things we talked about today, including some pretty sweet Red Panda performances.
Yes, and if you want to support the Horse Boys, you can do so in a couple ways. You can go to horsehoops.com/merch, you can get Supnerd shirts, you can get digital stuff. You can go to patreon.com/horsehoops, where you get episodes without the inserted ads and other audio and video extra content. And you will also get things like horse stickers if you support on the Patreon. That's patreon.com/horsehoops, but we'll close out this episode by saying something on the count of three as always do. We got to toss it to DT, right?
Yeah.
Maybe thanks DT on three.
Sure, let's do that.
Three.
Thanks, DT.
The goat.
Legend.
The goat.
Legend.
The trash-talking goat as well.